Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, let's play matchmaker. Jory Epstein and I have 9 teams. We'll find a match for all 9 head coaching vacancies. I'll ask Maurice Jones-Drew, the former rushing champion, who he would hire if he were running a team, and what's the key to victory for the Rams Sunday in Chicago? And the answer is not stay warm. Quinton Lake, Rams DB, joins us. You should as well. Inside Coverage, next. I promise at one point today during this edition of Inside Coverage on Yahoo, the how and the why and in everything you need to know about the National Football League, we are going to talk about divisional weekend. There are games. There are 4 of them. There are 8 teams remaining. It is kind of cliched, but it is, for my money, the best football weekend of the year. But we still have coaching to talk about because there are 9 jobs open, and we're going to play matchmaker today. It's like Fiddler on the Roof, but different, except it's a football podcast. Hi, my name is Andrew Siciliano. Joining me today to make matches, none other. Actually, I don't know that there's anyone other than Jory Epstein that I would want to do this job. The aforementioned Yahoo senior NFL writer. Hi there, Jory.
Hi, Andrew. That is very high praise, perhaps undeserved. I keep thinking about how you asked us for surprises in the coaching carousel a couple weeks before the end of the season. And I was like, my surprise is that Mike Tomlin and John Harbaugh aren't going anywhere because logically they are the best fits for the teams they're at, even though in the middle of the season I had predicted Harbaugh leaving. So you might not actually want to be matchmaking with me because sometimes I'm like, well, this is illogical, forgetting that the NFL is, in fact, often illogical.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody that knows things week 18 that weekend. And he was like, my prediction is that one of Harbaugh, Tomlin, or LaFleur is out. It's going to be like earth shattering. Texted them yesterday. I'm like, well, so far, you said only one. You're 2 for 2. You kind of blew it. Like, you might be 3 for 3. But that one is still hanging there. I mean, 9 is absurd. 9 is just... I mean, look at it this way. There are 8 teams still standing, so 24 teams at home right now. 9 of those 24, more than a third of those 24, looking for new head coaches. I also thought it was interesting yesterday, Steve Bisciotti, the Ravens owner, who should be on the podium every week. Clearly, he can't and won't. I don't know if the Ravens want to put him back out there after that hour. It was candid. It was funny. It was insightful. He said that college coaches had reached out to the Ravens. They hadn't reached out to college coaches, but the college coaches had reached out. And in his words, college coaching right now is a living hell. So there are 9 NFL openings, but it sounds like there are college coaches that want out of college football to make even more big money openings there in the college world.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I've talked to people who were in the NFL world and are now in the college world. And it's not just generally the landscape, it's also the transfer portal this week and particularly everything they're dealing with. So that doesn't surprise me. And also, if you're a college coach and you've had success, especially on the offensive side, but just in general, why wouldn't you want to try and take the opportunity to work for a stable organization with Lamar Jackson? I mean, this is not just any NFL job. And there are only so many NFL jobs. I keep thinking back to Mike Tomlin a couple weeks ago saying there are fewer NFL head coaches than there are members of the U.S. Senate. And it's like, well, now there's a lot fewer because we don't really have that many coaches. So we're down to less than half of the Senate number.
Yeah. And unlike the U.S. Senate, there is no age minimum to be an NFL head coach. So Davis Webb, 30, can interview for these jobs, or Sean McVay at 29 a few years ago, right around his 30th birthday, can interview and get one of these jobs, which is just absurd. We're going to play matchmaker coming up in a second for these 9. Also, I should tell you that coming up on this show is a guy that has some coaching insight, Maurice Jones-Drew, a former NFL rushing champion. We'll get his thoughts on the Jaguars. We'll get his thoughts on Mike Tomlin. He played against Mike Tomlin. We'll get his thoughts on the Rams and the Bears, and also the Rams' assistants that he's seen up close that are getting head coaching interest for some of those 9 openings. And it's not all Rams today, I promise, but Quinton Lake, who plays the star position kind of like a big nickel for the Rams. He just got a new contract. He has to stop Caleb Williams this weekend. He'll join us as well. Ask him how he plans to A, stay warm, and B, stop Caleb Williams. The most interesting thing in the NFL today, for my money, other than, you know, Stephen Ross claiming that somebody once offered him $15 billion for the Dolphins, which is $9 billion more than the most expensive franchise has gone for, which is the Commanders at just over $6 billion. The most interesting thing today is that Dante Moore decided he's going back to college. He's the Oregon quarterback who many people thought would be the second overall pick behind Fernando Mendoza. Last Friday, Mendoza's Indiana team destroyed Moore's Oregon team. Not all Dante Moore's fault, but he did throw a pick six on the opening play. He could have come out and still, most people will tell you, be the number two overall pick, which means he would have gone to the Jets in all likelihood. We're a long way until the draft, but that's what most people had thought. This is interesting, Jory. This kind of shakes up the top of the draft. Ty Simpson has declared from Alabama. Is he QB2? Is QB2 now floated higher up the board than most people thought he would have been? Is that Jets number two pick worth less if they want to get out? Because now teams that want to trade up to two wouldn't have to pay the quarterback premium. And where do the Jets go for a quarterback if they don't want Justin Fields? We have 3 months to dissect this. But when you first heard the news, what was your reaction?
Yeah, when I reach out to scouts around the league, they're like, look, he's still young. He can develop physically. Yeah. He wasn't necessarily a guaranteed top 10 pick in the minds of at least some scouts I talked to. And so you have these conversations. You're like, why not go back and get one more year? There's a number that scouts like to have, and a lot of times it's 30 starts even at the college level that they feel like really sets you up better to have success at the NFL level. And there are some quarterbacks in recent years who we've seen not have that number. And then it's kind of like their rookie year tends to be chaos. A lot of those head coaches get fired, and it's not until after that we start to see them develop into more of a rhythm. So if you can get that before you get into the NFL, not every franchise is going to have the patience if you don't figure it out right away. So I think there's that element. There's definitely a lot of quarterback need around the league, like you said, with the Jets. I mean, you know the Browns quite well. Even if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're not picking until much later, like, yeah, it'd be great if there was a storybook way for Pittsburgh to draft a quarterback and find their next guy of the future while the draft is in Pittsburgh this year. But that's not really how this class shakes out. And so I think when I look at players like Kyler Murray and Tua Tagovailoa, whose franchises seem to no longer be interested, they're both interesting to me in terms of, can they get that 1 year where they do great, or 1 year where they get an opportunity? What does it look like? And then there are also guys who maybe aren't quite in their category, but like a Malik Willis, who people definitely think is going to get an opportunity to start next year.
Yeah, it's, again, 3 months away from the draft. The quarterbacks, generally speaking, all get pushed higher up the board than maybe you think they should be during the season or shortly after the season. Dante Moore is an interesting kid. He's a five-star. He went to high school in Detroit, but he's actually born in Cleveland and spent his early years as a kid in suburban Cleveland. Then was a five-star at UCLA, transferred out, went to Oregon, waited his turn behind Dylan Gabriel, blew it up this year. What's also interesting, without, you know, getting too deep into college football, is Dylan Raiola, the kid who's been at Nebraska the last couple of years. If you don't know him, he's the guy that looks like Mahomes, at least, you know, body style, play style, haircut, all that. He has already committed to Oregon. Now, did he do so knowing Dante Moore was coming back? Did he do so thinking Dante Moore was gone and he was going to be the starter? Has that deal been signed? Does he go elsewhere? Does he now wait? And like, the draft is such an interesting thing. Drew Aller could have come out, had a big win for Penn State in the playoff. Then obviously they had the big loss as well. Drew Aller could have come out. He was probably a top 10 pick last year if he did. Went back to Penn State, hurt his leg in October. He was out for the year. Now, who knows? There's always a risk, but at the same time, with these college quarterbacks, you can make $4, 5, 6 million a year and come back. So why not come back? And to your point, Jory, get better. He's not ready, but he would have been picked high in all likelihood, even though he's not ready, because quarterbacks are at a premium. All right, we'll worry about that in 3 months. Let's play matchmaker. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we're not going to do like swiping or anything like that. I thought of like making this like a dating app. You're not on one. You're happily married. Nor am I, although I'm an unrestricted free agent currently. So we're not going to do it that way. Start of the new league year is March, by the way. Get your contracts ready. We're going to do it. We're just going to list the teams, and then let's look for a match. Okay, let's go with the most recent and work backwards. Jarrell, I'll let you go first. Make a match. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match for Art Rooney II, who said today on the podium that no one on his staff, his current staff, is going to be a candidate. So thanks, Arthur Smith, for all your fine contributions. We'll take him out of it. Find a match.
Yeah, and I'm excited to hear yours. So I hope you thought of them beforehand so that we can compare our matches for these, Andrew. Okay, great. So my match for the Steelers is Robert Saleh. I think that when Robert Saleh was with the New York Jets, he had that tough, gritty identity with a great defense that the Steelers have long been known for a while. And his defense continued to be like a top five defense, even when they were in the quarterback wilderness, which I would say Pittsburgh is pretty firmly in, particularly after Aaron Rodgers came to play for Mike Tomlin, as Art Rooney said during his press conferences, and is not expected to return. So if I want a coach he's not old, he's in his 40s. I get that he's not like Sean McVay, 30 years old, but he's in his late 40s. He's had that experience defensively. He has some ties in terms of background to D'Amico Ryan, who we just saw completely take apart the Steelers when the Texans came to Pittsburgh. And I think that if you look at this, you just say that is a guy who can have the culture, he can keep the defensive identity, and he's been around the block also with much more dysfunctional ownership than the Steelers. And so I think that to be able to put him with the ownership group that's not currently or constantly, I should say, getting in his way, I think he could have a lot of success.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. He certainly has the personality. I do think he's going to get another head coaching opportunity. The question is it there? My match, somewhat similar. It's another former head coach who's currently a defensive coordinator, but this guy's contract is up. I'm going to go with Brian Flores. He's been in the building. He was an assistant, an analyst, whatever you want to call it. He got thrown a lifeline by Mike Tomlin after he left Miami. I don't know that the lawsuit does or doesn't complicate things. I've been asked that a bunch because he's suing the NFL. I don't know how that complicates things. I do think it matters. I think it weighs differently in different buildings. But they know him. I assume they like him. He's been there. He's a fiery leader. He is as good a defensive coordinator as there is in the NFL. And he will get that defense back to where it needs to be. Now, they play a different – they play a 3-4 there. You're going to have to retool the roster. And Rooney was asked a couple of times today, is your roster going to be limiting in your coaching search? And he said, hey, we're going to ask the new coach or the coaching candidates what you think of our roster. Rooney pushed back against the idea that they would tear it down. He goes, I don't know why you play a season and not try to win. So they're not interested in rebuilding. You still have to figure out the quarterback. But I think Flo is an interesting fit there. I think Flo would be great for the AFC North as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great one. And I think also, again, similar to what I was saying with Salah, the idea of when you can keep your group motivated, even when the team as a whole is not having success, I think that speaks to both the defensive mind of those two guys and also the motivational element of those two minds. So, yeah, I mean, Brian Flores, they have requested for an interview, and I think that that one would make a lot of sense. And to your point about different teams feeling differently about the lawsuit, I would say that the Steelers are pretty firmly on one side of that camp in terms of how much I think it would stop them. I think Mark Davis also would not be stopped by a lawsuit like that. But I do think that other buildings, he would have to think about that, or he would at least be asked about it is probably the right way to say it. Who would you want as the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh if Flo was there? Because I think you need someone to balance out the personality.
It's a great question. I mean, Grant Yudinski obviously was with him in Minnesota. I'm just connecting the dots. I have no insight as to their personal relationship whatsoever, but that would be a home run. But you also have to find the quarterback. Like, they're picking 21st again. Right. Like, we said all spring and all summer when angry Steeler fans were saying, we don't want Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't want to come here. He's not our kind of quarterback, and he doesn't respect the Steelers. Guys, you have no other choice. Like, try. Why not? Like, what's the worst that can happen? You're one and done in the playoffs, and you're picking 21st again? Well, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So they do have to find a quarterback. And that's a huge part of this undertaking. And it's one of the reasons, and I've had Steeler fans push back at me, it's one of the reasons why this isn't the most attractive job. Like, you know, it's the Steelers. They have stability and ownership and a great fan base. Like, that makes it a highly desirable job. You're the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. But when you, like, put the museum to one side, you also have an aging roster without a quarterback. So you have to navigate that as well. All right, let's go to the Ravens. They do have a quarterback. They have a general manager who is highly regarded. Pretty good roster, most people would tell you. You could argue as to how good it is. But they've got a quarterback who yesterday the owner said he wants to give a new deal to and wants to get it done by the start of the new league year. Jory, make a match for the new head coach of the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I'm putting Jesse Minter with the Baltimore Ravens. I think he's someone who has already spent some time in the Ravens building. Now he's currently working for the other Harbaugh gym over in Los Angeles. And with the Chargers defense, he made Drake May look a lot less comfortable than Drake May had looked throughout an MVP candidate season. He also recently had that experience with the Michigan staff under Harbaugh. So there was an element, or there is an element, of him being able to connect with that age group of players. I think that someone who's young, someone who's defensive, mix it up from Harbaugh, but also enough familiarity that you understand what you're getting.
I think it's the perfect one. You actually stole my answer here. I think there is regret in that building that they ever let Mike McDonald out of said building. I mean, they had to let him go. He got offered a head coaching job, and John Harbaugh wasn't going to get fired, at least not then. It's the one question that Bisciotti wasn't asked yesterday. Like, hey, you wish you had done this 2 years ago and kept Mike McDonald? And I don't know. He was on a heater yesterday. Maybe he would have given you an honest answer that would have raised some eyebrows. This is the slam dunk, easy choice. I am curious, too, though, because he said that he was intrigued by the former head coaches that are, you know, that it didn't work, they got fired, but he's curious to hear why it didn't work, and he doesn't want to make them a victim of their circumstances. So whether it's Cliff Kingsbury or Robert Saleh, I think he'd be a good fit there as well, or a Kevin Stefanski, a Mike McDaniel. I don't know, Mike McDaniel and Steve Bisciotti, I don't know how they would get along. I don't know if that's the right fit for the face of the franchise that he wants. But I would not keep my eye off those.
I
but
think Cliff as OC with Jesse as the head coach.
So do you think Lamar wants to run anymore? Because I thought about Cliff as OC as well. Does that still mesh with the player Lamar Jackson thinks he is and wants to be?
Do you think he's anti-running? Or that he just also wants to pass? I mean, Jaden Daniels was passing quite a bit when he was healthy last year.
Oh, totally. But he also is a key part of the run game. I get the sense Lamar doesn't want to run much anymore. Now, to his credit, he has developed into one of the best pocket passers in the NFL. The numbers tell the story. It is a credit to his hard work and how much his game has developed. I remember standing on the field with Steve Bisciotti, actually, the two of us watching Lamar Jackson practice as a rookie in 2018, and he couldn't throw it in the ocean if he was standing on the boat. I mean, it was actually uncomfortable to watch at times. It was a joint practice, the Ravens and the Rams, and it was awkward. He is now deadly accurate in the pocket. There were times this year, and I know he was fighting injuries, where you're like, Lamar, the old Lamar would have run. This Lamar did not. So I'm curious how much of it is the injuries. But yeah, either way, Cliff's a hell of an OC. I don't think anyone debates that.
Yeah, I think there were injuries going on. There were also some team dynamics going on. And I'm not saying that those will disappear now that you have a new coaching staff. That you'll have to ask, but I'm not sure they will continue. I think the other element here is when I talk to people around the league and I'm like, well, what about someone from the Shanahan-McVay system, McVay-Shanahan? And obviously Mike McDaniel has some of those philosophies in his game, even if he's tweaked it a bit. They feel like the degree of pocket passing timing that system is predicated on is not the best fit for Lamar, not because he can't do it, but because it would eliminate the superpower of him being a dual threat. It doesn't really emphasize the running quarterback as much.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of lean towards having someone who can do it, even if they're not only having Lamar run.
Yeah, it's a fantastic point. So because a lot of people have gone like, well, Clint Kubiak, I don't know that, to your point, that's maybe the best. All right, we're killing the clock already, so let's try to blow through these a little bit faster. and part of this is my fault. Obviously, I take the blame. It's always my fault. The Browns, who you got?
Yeah, I've got Clint Kubiak there, and I think that he would be a really interesting fit. I think that if you can get the players on board with the scheme, having that Shanahan-McVay system, that seems to give players who might not have the number one athletic traits in the league a little bit of an edge from a schematic system would be good. And in my mind, you have him come in, first-time head coach on the younger side, keep Jim Schwartz on the defensive side so that Jim is kind of head coach of the defense, he's head coach of the offense, and I think they could play off each other, and scheme could help compensate for the talent deficit on the Browns offense if it's not fully there yet.
It's a good one. Clint interviewed for the OC job last year. So did Daryl Bevel. So did Tom Urias. Obviously, Tommy got it. A big part of that, though, was the understanding that Kevin was still going to call plays. That wasn't set in stone at that point. Kevin will tell you that, hey, if there's a guy that he was 100% like, yeah, this is you, call plays, that person would have gotten the job. It ended up being Tommy, and Tommy took over. I thought he did a good job in the second half of the season. My pick here is Matt Burke. It's the same system. He learned it from Jim Schwartz. He was a Jim Schwartz assistant in Philadelphia. He's an Ivy League guy, Browns Ivy League, obviously plenty of connections there, went to Dartmouth. He's a fiery leader. He could lead the room. Jim Schwartz is there, who's been a former head coach. You either keep Tommy, I would love Tommy to stay, or you try to go get a Shielhouse or Udinski or somebody like that, or a younger play caller. Neither of those guys has called plays, by the way, and give them that middle step before they become a head coach. All right, Falcons. This one's interesting. I think this, don't at me, people. I think this is the best job. Just, this is me.
Well, then you won't be surprised that I gave it to one of the best candidates out there, and Kevin Stefanski. I think that Kevin would be a good fit. I don't think it's just because of the Kirk Cousins connection, although I do think that could be helpful in terms of the players understanding the system, learning it, having a guy in the room who's familiar with what Kevin has done in the past. I also just think that this is the type of job where he would have a degree of talent probably beyond what he's had on the offensive side, and he's twice as coach of the year taken a team that had some degree of talent and elevated beyond expectation. The Falcons have had the opposite in recent years, at least what we think. So Kevin can turn that around.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is a perfect fit for him, whether it's Kirk or whomever. And if not, then you got to figure out whether or not Penix is the guy, though Matt Ryan supported him yesterday. You have a running back. You've got a wide receiver. You potentially have a tight end if you keep Kyle Pitts. You have an offensive line, at least pieces. And for the first time in a decade, you have young players on the defense that actually got to the quarterback last year. The Falcons did not sack the quarterback for a decade until this past season. Now they do. You have a somewhat impatient owner, but one that's willing to spend some money. You have a reasonably apathetic fan base that cares more about Georgia's transfer portal than it does about your football team, so a little less pressure. You have a great building. I think Kevin makes all the sense in the world. He and Matt Ryan did not go to the same high school, but hey, there's that whole Philly thing there. I think that is perfect. Titans, what do you got?
I just got a note, Andrew. I know we are trying to move on, but I just got a note that you have to be careful about saying someone didn't sack the quarterback in a decade, because we just had a team that literally didn't intercept the ball all season in the Jets.
This is true.
It's not necessarily going to sound like an exaggeration. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought you were going to say for a year. So I'm just saying, I get what you meant, but we have teams who are running into these superlatives.
Yes. It's a fair point. Look at the Falcons stats. They were near the bottom of the league for a decade.
Yeah.
Okay. This year, they finally found a couple of guys in Jalen Walker and James Pierce. But point taken. Tennessee, what do you got?
Yeah, Matt Nagy seems like the pretty obvious fit there. I recognize that general manager Mike Borgonzi said he was going to remove Chiefs bias from his search. I think he had to say that so that people don't think when Matt Nagy gets hired that it was only because of their connections. But look, they won Super Bowls together. They've been in the building together. He's seen Matt's offensive mind. He's seen how he feels like he could develop a young quarterback, which is first and foremost the most important responsibility of whoever's coming to coach Cam Ward. And he thinks he's probably learned from his first stop in Chicago. So I think that's where we're headed.
I kind of think the same thing. It's kind of scary that we agree. Actually, it isn't scary. I take that back. I'm happy that we agree. I like Matt Nagy. I'm old enough to have called Matt Nagy arena football games back in the day. He could sling it. Was he for the Philadelphia team? Was he the Georgia team? Either way. Yeah, I'll go Matt Nagy there as well without a lot of explanation. How about the Raiders?
I think the Raiders are an interesting one because I think they could hire Davis Webb, 30 years old from Denver, considered an up and coming offensive mind. I think they just tried the Pete Carroll, Chip Kelly, tried and true, been around the block, and it didn't work. And I think if you are them, you say, well, can we try and get that up and coming Sean McVay type guy who is going to help Fernando Mendoza if they take him with the first overall pick? I think in an ideal world for them, they're able to get like him as head coach, Vance Joseph as defensive coordinator. I recognize that Vance could get a head coaching job. I'm also not positive about his contract, so I'm not saying you could pull it off, but I do think that that pairing of someone from the Denver defensive staff this year, especially if it's someone with a lot of experience, and Davis Webb could be an interesting fit for the Raiders trying to keep pace with that division.
All right, so we're kind of on the same track here, but I'm going to go Mike LaFleur. So he doesn't take the Cardinal job. Why would you want to coach against Sean and Kyle and Mike McDonald? He instead takes the Raider job. It's a short flight, gets to work with a young quarterback. I'll go Mike LaFleur. How about the Cardinals?
Yeah, I think the Cardinals go Jeff Hafley. I think this is a team that just liked Jonathan Gannon because it was a defensive play caller. You're in that NFC West where, quite frankly, it's going to be hard to get the offensive edge. And so you should instead get the defensive edge of a group or of a guy who can elevate that defensive group, slow down this super potent NFC West where every team but you is in the final four of the NFC right now. And oh, by the way, Jeff Hafley has had coaching experience with Boston College before his Green Bay days. So kind of like we talked about with guys earlier, he can connect with that younger group the way Jesse Minter can, and he has an understanding of what he needs to do to manage a program.
All right, this one's going to be out of left field. What if I said Mike McCarthy? They don't have a quarterback here, but how about, and I don't know that Mike McCarthy wants this job, but I would love some stability. I know this, you're making a face. Mike McCarthy, I think, if you look at all the wins, how many 12-win seasons in Dallas? Maybe this one would make more sense for the Raiders, although I don't think Mark Davis wants to spend as much money on another coach. He's paying 10 of them. But Mike McCarthy, I think, would also make sense in Vegas. I don't know that it makes total sense in Arizona, but I wanted to find a home for him. And this is the only one that I thought made a modicum of sense, although I don't know that I totally buy it now that I say it out loud.
I understand where you're coming from. I understand the reasoning. And I mean, look, the Cardinals also, quite frankly, are not going to have their pick of the litter given what they've got on the roster and what how they've been running through coaches. So I understand where you're saying, okay, someone who really wants another opportunity and it's not their first one and all of that.
All right. Do we agree John Harbaugh for the Giants?
Yes, we agree, John Harbaugh, for the Giants. I think that John Harbaugh needs a quarterback in Jackson Dart who can give him some degree of dual threat after having Lamar to game plan with. And Jackson Dart needs an adult in the room who's going to be like, you can be explosive without being reckless. Here's how.
Bam. All right. Dolphins, last one.
I think the Dolphins are interesting because I think the Dolphins could have Matt LaFleur as their head coach. I know we're not there yet, but I think the longer the Packers drag this out, the more we have questions of do the Packers general or the Packers front office and Ed Policy, their first year president, and Matt LaFleur agree on his value. And if they're so not in agreement on his value, the way that we saw, for example, with Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy last year, do you say, well, okay, if you want that value, go find someone who will pay it for you? And by the way, the Packers just sent general manager John Eric Sullivan over to the Dolphins. So you got the general manager there. You have a Malik Willis quarterback situation that they can go get to solve the quarterback question in Miami. And you just kind of have like a Green Bay 2.0 down in Miami. And oh, by the way, the family gets to live in warm weather instead of in Green Bay.
Interesting. I like that. I'm going to go Anthony Campanelli, who just had an outstanding year as the Jaguars defensive coordinator. He's a former Dolphins assistant. Obviously, you saw him on Hard Knocks, Scream and Yell. And this is Psych 101 here, but it's tried and true through all sports in North America and probably the world. You go exactly the opposite of the guy you just had. So you have the funny, joking, fashion plate, you know, sweatpants with like one leg up and one leg down, Mike McDaniel. And then you go with the screaming Italian, which I'm allowed to call him because I'm a screaming Italian too. So there you go. It's totally the opposite. I don't know that it's going to happen. I was just trying to be a little bit different there as I was with Mike McCarthy. So there, those are guaranteed or your money back, something like that. Matchmaker for your 9 open head coaching jobs. Coming up next, I'll ask Maurice Jones-Drew who he would hire if he was running a franchise. That's on Inside Coverage after this. So sometimes you're walking down the street and you run into an old friend, like a guy you used to sit on the plane next to or near, at least. He was usually up in first or like BS in the newsroom all the time. Maurice Jones-Drew is on Inside Coverage. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Andrew. How are you? See, you didn't say what happened. I'm going to tell
the
truth.
Go ahead.
Andrew's so big time. I'm walking down the Strand, you know, and I see Andrew and he has his headphones in and I kind of take a glance like there's no way that's Andrew. So I clap first just to get you to look like.
I didn't hear it.
Didn't hear it. And then I yell your name and then you turn. And then I got off the phone and I was like, yo, what is going on? You almost big time me in that sector. I would have looked crazy walking down the beach and, you know, bothering this random guy that people probably didn't have no idea what was going on. But yeah, it was good.
Listen, I was always, I always wanted to be working. So yes, I was going the other way and I had my head down because I was actually listening to Kevin O'Connell's end of season press conference. I think I told you that. And he had just said something about J.J. McCarthy. So I tweet too much. I was tweeting what he said about J.J. McCarthy, about competition for next year. And then all of a sudden you're like, yo, like, dude, I'm like, oh my God, it's good to see you.
Yeah, anyway, that's what happens.
Yeah, that's what happens. And then get this, like we both go home and 5 minutes after I walk in the door, Mike Tomlin quits after 19 years. So I was doing some digging and I figured it out. You and the Jaguars were in Pittsburgh. So it was the 07 playoffs, January of 08. Mike Tomlin's first year, you scored two touchdowns. You gave Mike Tomlin his first playoff loss. 19 years later, A, are you surprised? And B, do you think it's the right time?
I'm very surprised. Do I think it's the right time? I think it's the right time. I think he still should be coaching. I think he's still a tremendous coach. But I think they were so good for so long that they couldn't get the necessary pieces to take that next step, if that makes sense.
Right? In other words, they're always picking in the 20s and you're not going to get better.
Yeah, and then the only way you can really, like, there's no quarterback that's going to fall to you after Big Ben lost. Like, you tried to go with all these different guys and it didn't work out. You drafted Kenny Pickett. Like, all these things, it just never panned out. And you never had the ability to have a top 10 pick or a top 5 pick or the number 1 overall pick, right? And it's because of how good of a coach he was. No matter what they had, he was able to coach them to be above 500 all the time. Now, I say this because obviously being a Jags player, the Jags had the first overall pick back-to-back years, right? And with the first overall pick, you get to pick the best talent there is out there. You have the opportunity, or you can trade back and get more stuff. The Pittsburgh Steelers haven't had that in, what, 40 years? Right, they're so used to picking in 20, you know, all the way to 32 that you've never had that opportunity. And so, to me, I just felt like he saw like this was his last kind of chance to try to win it with Aaron Rodgers. We're gonna take one last swing at it, and it didn't work out. And so maybe I don't know if he's done coaching. I know he's stepping down as a head coach of Pittsburgh. I hope that he's not coaching because his style and the way he coaches and some of the things that he does is needed in this world, in this coaching world.
And what do you mean by that?
I just think holding people accountable. I think the way he gives guys opportunities, right? Coaches, young coaches, opportunities. One of those young coaches being Gerald Alexander, that a guy I played with, he was in Miami, gets let go from Miami, got an opportunity to work there with Flores and then learn from Mike T, understand kind of the system and what they want to do. I think on the other side of the ball, too, Arthur Smith. He gave Arthur Smith an opportunity, right? A coach that was fired. He gave Todd Haley an opportunity after his failed time when he was the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. So he gives guys opportunities, and he helps groom guys. I wouldn't say necessarily it's like rehab, but he gives guys chances that they probably wouldn't have gotten in the league, just depending on how things go. He doesn't look at – he looks at your work, not who you are, right?
Interesting.
He doesn't know – like, I say that with this being said, how many people have we seen the Rams lose, right? Like a head coach, and then they take all their assistants. You know what I mean? And I'm because they're comfortable with those guys. Mike Tomlin takes guys that he doesn't know, because when you interview, if you do well in the interview, if you know what you're talking about, he's going to give you a chance to work with them. And I think that's something huge in the coaching world.
All right. So there are 9 openings now, which is just bonkers. Mike Tomlin being insane. Mike Tomlin being the 9th. If you, Maurice Jones-Drew, were running a team, running an organization, and had to hire a head coach this year, who would you hire?
Had to hire a head coach. Let's see.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think. Like, if I'm Atlanta, I'm hiring an offensive guru. That's what I'm hiring. For 2 reasons. I think the team depends on it. If I'm Baltimore, I'm hiring a Clint Kubiak. I would hire a guy from that tree. Now, I probably would hire Mike LaFleur or Clint Kubiak first. They'll be my top 2 guys. Reason being is younger guys haven't been head coaches before, so they're going to need help. And for me as an organization, I can help mold my coach. Very similar to what the Rams did with Sean, right?
What about just like a leader of men? Like, I know the coordinating thing is a huge deal, obviously, right? You don't want to hire an offensive head coach that maybe doesn't fit with the personnel you have or whatever. But like leader of men, Art Rooney today, the Steelers owner, is on the podium. They say, what are you looking for? He said a leader, somebody who can command the room. Like Ben Johnson clearly has that. But I remember last year there were people saying, well, Ben's the mad scientist as the OC, but can he really command the room? Well, hell yeah, he can. That's evident. Is that the most important thing?
The NFL is based on winning and losing, right? So Ben Johnson, you're commanding the room because you're winning. You know what I mean? Like Pete Carroll's a leader of men. Okay, true. Pete Carroll can command a room, but it's hard to command a room when you're 2-14, right? Like, I don't care what room you're in. It's the last game of the year. You've been eliminated. You're trying to get your guys to go out and play. Like, that doesn't mean you're a good head coach. I love the cliches that people talk about, like leader of men and, oh, this, like, to me, this is a bottom line business. You get paid an extraordinary amount. My agents should tell me this all the time. You get paid a king's ransom to play a kid's game. Mm-hmm. I need you to win. And so winning and the way you go about winning is the most important thing. And I think that's the biggest deal. Like, I always go back to what the Rams did with Sean McVay. They knew that Sean might not have been ready at the time, but they knew he was going to be a candidate a couple of years later. They probably weren't going to be able to get their hands on. So they said, listen, we're going to do this, and then we're going to work. We're going to mold you. We're going to help you go forward. We're going to help you lead, be a leader of men. We're going to raise you up and put a foundation of pieces around you. So we're going to go get a Wade Phillips, who's been a head coach before, to be your DC. We're going to have a Bones Fossil here, right? And so I would rather do that, because winning is so important in this league, that if I got a Mike LaFleur or a Clint Kubiak, I can go pair him with a DC that is a really good DC that's been a head coach before, or that I trust knows what's going on. And then I'm going to tell said DC and said special teams coach, hey, your job is to help him. You see what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, if I go and get, let's say if I go get Mike Tomlin, right? If I don't have the right OC and the right DC, we're going to lose. And you can be a leader of men all you want to. We're just, you know, and so it's such a bottom line business. I believe that's why you're seeing so many, like KOC, for example. Him with Brian Flores is a terrific thing, because guess what? Brian Flores is the head coach. You took him from Pittsburgh. You brought him to Minnesota. And at a time, they had the chance to be the 1 seed. That, to me, is the way I would build my roster.
All right. So you kind of walked me into one of the things I wanted to ask you. You mentioned Mike LaFleur. Mike LaFleur is the OC there with the Rams. Obviously, Sean calls play. Mike LaFleur used to be the OC of the Jets. He's Matt LaFleur's younger brother. Everybody knows that. But the name that keeps getting thrown about is Nate Shielhaus. Nate's the passing game coordinator. He was a quarterback, a good quarterback at Illinois, was at Iowa State under Matt Campbell. He's paid his dues. He's only 35 years old now. But he, much like Sean, people are saying, well, he may not be ready, But wouldn't you rather have him a year before he's ready than miss the boat on him and someone else gets him? And then you're like, man, I wish I had hired Nate Shieldhouse. Do you know him at all? Like, how well do you know him? Do you think he's ready?
I don't know him that well. I've seen him around. We've spoken. But he's part of the brain trust. And right. the reason I'm saying that, I would have probably, he's in that boat too, of guys that I would want. It's the younger they are, the more creative they are. Right. And in this day and age with how good players are, how they train, how fast they are, how athletic they are, how some of these defenses are run, you have to try to find an edge. Right. And I think when you have these young OCs or these young guys that are going in, they find an edge by, you know, creating motion and mismatches and doing certain things. And he's learning under one of the better ones to do it. I would say even Davis Webb is another guy that I would look into.
30 years old.
As a guy. But again, I want that mind of yours. I want to understand the knowledge and understand what's going on. Winning in this game, and again, I always tell people this, I coach high school football. High school football is completely different than college and the NFL. High school football, you're trying to develop young minds. You're trying to hold them accountable. You want to make sure they understand the world that they're going to go into is not going to, it's not going to be sorry, right? People are going to feel sorry for you. People are going to, there's going to be expectation. You have to rise to the challenge when you get to the real world. When you get to the NFL, the margin of error is this big. So if I can get a young guy, if I can put a veteran DC around, like for example, my ideal situation would be, let's just say Nate Shieldhouse, and then give me Pete Carroll as DC or Gus Bradley as his DC, right?
How about Jim Schwartz as his DC?
Jim Schwartz as his DC, right? There you go. I know you're the Browns. Guys that have been head coaches, guys that understand what's going on, and your job is to just continue to guide him and help him. And then I'm going to add other head coaches that are going to be on his roster, right? I'm going to add other guys that have had that experience on his roster so that he has people that he can lean on. It's just like the quarterback. Right. I remember when Sean McVay first got to the Rams, a good friend of mine is Greg Olson, OC for mm-hmm. the Raiders. He was a quarterback coach. They had Dan Orlovsky in the room. Right. And you had Sean McVay and they had other people that Jared could bounce ideas off of. When you have a young quarterback that you're trying to, you know, you want to give him as many resources as possible. Same thing as a head coach. If I have a young head coach, I want to give him as many resources and people that can be around him nonstop to help him build up, because I want you for your play calling, and then I'm going to teach you and help you learn to be a leader of men.
All right, I could do this for an hour. I don't want to hold you an hour. So let's go real quick through a couple other things. Your team, the Jags, got bounced. I mean, they fought. They had a great second half of the season, a great season overall, but they lost to the Bills. The end of season podium today, James Gladstone, the GM, who we both know from his Rams days, and couldn't be happier for his success, said that Travis Hunter next year will continue to play both ways, but maybe emphasis a little bit more on the defensive side of the ball. They've got a lot of guys, a lot of DBs heading into free agency. What do you think of that?
I love it. I think the Jags have done an awesome job. I think James Gladstone, Tony Boselli, Liam Cohen, they've done a great job. Jake Tammy, our guy that mm-hmm. works with us in the radio booth, that's there helping. They've done a great job of really working together, right?
But you're cool with him more at corner.
I'm gonna get to that. The reason I say that is they're working together, right? So when you have three guys working together, all on the same page, you have the ability to say, "Hey, we got a guy that we can utilize both ways," right? This year we emphasize more offense. I think next year, depending on our structure of how our roster is, because we have pending free agents and we don't know how we're going to go, we may need him more to play, you know, be more of a defensive guy and then get some reps on offense here or there. That's only works with communication. And so I love it because that tells me that they're communicating in a way that everyone understands and everyone's on the same page. As an offensive head coach, you're thinking, Liam's like, I need this guy. Because to be honest, he was the number one wide receiver. He was the guy that they were targeting in that Rams game in London. They were going at him. I think he had 100 in the touchdown, and then he ended up getting hurt.
But that was his first big deep ball, first big touchdown explosive. Yeah.
They kind of really put him in on offense to let him go do his thing. And then to me, that's guys that are communicating. So I love that. I love that. I think there's a lot. I think there's more players that are athletic that Travis Hunter has opened the door for to be able to do those things. But you have to have, again, we talked about being innovative, being creative, and then the communicating. And when you do those three things, you get guys like Travis Hunter that are tremendous talent that could really help your roster. And they always said this, and they said this in the beginning. They thought he was a first-round pick at wide receiver and at corner. And so they don't have a first-round pick this year, so they're going to be able to utilize that pick for 2 years.
That pick's going to the Browns as part of that trade. That pick ends up being number 24 after they lose on wild card weekend. You're wearing your Rams shirt. I haven't forgotten about the Rams.
No, all good.
What's your biggest concern Sunday night in Chicago?
I mean, I think the weather always plays a factor in a team that comes from great weather. Like I said, I was just walking in LA and it's 75 degrees and sunny. Yeah, people are in shorts. Like I'm out here trying to get back in shape. So I'm sweating and there's people just like walking their little labradoodles and having a pumpkin spice latte. They're just enjoying life right now. It's perfect weather. And so that's always tough, right? Going to the Midwest, the weather's always going to be hard. That's going to play a part in it. But when you look at this team, obviously the run game for Chicago gives you a little nervousness. They've done an awesome job. Jonah Jackson being there, kind of a revenge game, him kind of doing his career over in Chicago after what happened last year with the Rams, getting banged up. And then really Caleb's ability to scramble, that's just on the offensive line. His ability to create, that's always scary, right? We watched that. I'm sure you watched that wild card game against the Panthers. Bryce Young was able to create a little bit. So you got to eliminate that. On the other side of the ball, it's just they're opportunistic. Like, if the ball's there, they're gonna go get it. And they're going to go find ways. I want to say Kevin Byard has, what, 7 picks on the year or something like that?
They let the league take aways. They give up yards, they take it away.
But that's what scares me, the takeaways, right? It scares me because our quarterback isn't afraid to make the hard throw, right? And so you kind of can play with fire that way. But that's – with all that being said, I think the Rams are back. They're as healthy as they've been the last 6 weeks. And that to me is a plus. And I'm going to go do the Rams podcast tomorrow. And I'm going to say this on air. It's not about the Bears. It's about the Rams executing and doing that. That's how good they are. And so if they go out and execute the way they're supposed to, I think they're going to be fine.
All right. And I think they are as well, although this one kind of scares me. Last thing, so Ben's whole thing with Matt LaFleur and bleep the Packers, and like, I enjoy beating Matt LaFleur twice a year. Schrager brought this up on the TV Monday. Obviously, Mike LaFleur is there. Sean and Matt are like this, BFFs.
Yeah.
Have you heard at all? Do you think at all that at all is any kind of get under Sean and Mike's skin kind of rallying cry this week? Is that at all a factor? Like, Sean wants to kill them. Okay. Sean wants to win the game. It's a playoff game. But is he coming in like, I'm going to kill this guy?
No, I think I love the rivalry of it. And I'm going to give you a little history on this after I tell you to answer that question. I love the rivalry of it. I love that Ben Johnson went out there and said he hates the Packers because that's what Chicago wants to hear. Absolutely. That's their rival. It could have been Matt LaFleur. Could have been a random guy, Tom, walking down the street that's the head coach of the Packers. He's going to say the same thing. It had nothing to do with LaFleur. Totally. It had everything to do with the Packers. And I love that, right? I love that he came from Detroit saying, hey, look, we've already beaten them twice a year. I can't wait to do it again. But I do understand that Sean and Mike are their competitors, right? Mm-hmm. And if someone ever were to say that they like beating on my brother, guess what? When I get a chance, I'm going to try to like put foot to butt. You know, the BTA, if I could, if you may. So I think that plays a part in it. And the reason I say that is, do you remember, was it 2018 when the Rams went to we went to New Orleans 3 times?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Sean Payton, remember in the preseason, Sean Payton like kicked the onside kick, or he just did some stuff that you weren't supposed to do.
ridiculous. So it was a preseason game in 2018, and in the fourth quarter, Sean Payton was ran a fake punt. There was another punt where there was a penalty. It's the final preseason game of the year. Like, everyone wants to go home and do the roster cuts tomorrow and get on with the season. He's picking up flags and making guys re-kick. He's running trick plays. Nate Burleson, you were doing radio. Nate Burleson and I were doing TV, and I looked at Nate. We went to a break, and I was like, "Dude, what's going on? Am I reading this right?" He's like, "No, this is bleeped. Basically,
this is personal.
This is personal. Yes,
but this is why it was personal, because Sean Payton is an offensive guy. He's always been considered the guru. Sean comes up, and he's the new boy genius, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone was talking like that, and so Sean gets after him in the preseason. And then we go to New Orleans in the regular season. He gets after him. They do some funny stuff there. Just some weird stuff. Nah, that's not necessarily how you're supposed to do it. But it was it started to create this rivalry, right? And then you get to the NFC Championship game. And that was the whole Marcus Peters, because remember Sean Payton got into it with Marcus Peters, and it just creates a rivalry. And so to me, going back to it is, I understand where Ben Johnson's coming from. I understand why he said those things, but the handshake at the end, all the little funny stuff that you're doing, you got to remember there's people that have friends, and just like Ben Johnson has friends in this thing. And if someone did to do that to him, you would want your friends to, have your back. And I think that's what's going to, it gives you a little bit of something. Sean's a competitor, so he's going to take what he can and use it to help him be better. And sure. I love that. I love it. It reminds me of I remember being at UCLA and playing SC, and we lost all three times, right? And I used to beat those dudes all in high school. But every year, you could be 0-8, and they could be 10-0. It doesn't matter, whatever. 0-10, then 10-0. That game mattered because you played those some of your boys. Those are some of your high school rivals that went over there. And when you create that, it's just a different physical type of ball game. And that's what you love about it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does mean something. And I hope it does matter. And I'm all for the rivalries. And one of these days, the oral history of the 2018 team and everything in that season will be written. And you could tell all those stories, because that preseason game was one of the weirdest things I have ever been to. And the idea that 6 months later, 5 months later, we were back there for the NFC Championship game. And people remember that as the Mikel Roby Coleman. And oh, my God, it was pass interference. It was pass interference. People also forget the previous possession when on the 2-yard line, Jared had his face mask pulled 90 degrees to the left, and they didn't throw the flag. They would have had it first and goal on the 1 if they had thrown the flag. I mean, they went straight Linda Blair on Jared's face mask. They would have punched it in. It would have been a totally different score. People forget the Saints got the ball first in overtime. Quit your yapping. All that, understanding it should have been pass interference. I totally get it. But the idea that that DPI would have magically put them in the Super Bowl, and forgetting all the other craziness in that game. Also, it was the loudest building I've ever been to in my life. And I'm not sure all of that noise was natural, but I'll just say that.
hey, I'll just say that. Listen, all that stuff Sean Payton did those 2 games prior, or the 2 games before, that DPI was worth every bit of it, man.
That said, I like Sean, and I wish him well this weekend.
Yeah,
absolutely. Dude, we held you too long. I appreciate you. It was good to run into you. Good luck in Chicago on Sunday. And stay warm. I'll be honest, I was in that booth a couple of weeks ago doing a game. I've told the story countless times on this show. The space heater, the floor heater underneath your desk ain't going to work well. So wear heavy socks, wear 3 pairs, whatever, because that window's open. You can't keep it closed. It's a garage door. So you're going to freeze.
Listen, I'll have layers. I'm layering up as we speak.
Many layers.
So, yes, we'll be good to go.
All right, man. Thank you, sir.
All right, see you later. No problem.
He is a repeat guest, and it is great to have this guy back on Inside Coverage on Yahoo. Since Quentin Lake was last on the show, he has himself a brand new contract extension with the Rams. So before we get into the football, Q, welcome back and congrats, belated congrats on that, man.
Andrew, thank you so much for having me back on. I appreciate it. And yeah, it's these last couple of weeks have been pretty nice. Not only the wins, but also, being able to be, extended. That was fantastic.
And well-deserved as well. The win being the win in Carolina in the wild card round, and now you guys go to Chicago to face the Bears on Sunday night, and I promise we'll talk plenty about that. But as we record this here on Wednesday afternoon, the news is very fresh. Mike Tomlin steps down after 19 years in Pittsburgh. Yeah. For those who do not know, you are kind of Steelers royalty here, family royalty. Your dad, your old man, Carnell, a Steelers legend. On the field, he coached with Mike Tomlin for 7 or 8 years as the DB coach with the Steelers. You were born there. I mean, the Steelers are your first football family. What did you think when you heard the news today?
To be honest, at first I was a little surprised just because, you know, you never really see a departure like that, especially with a coach that's been there for so long. He hasn't had a losing season ever since he's been there, which is that's unheard of. But at the same time, I realized it and I was like, you know, he's leaving on his own terms. And for a coach like that, he can enjoy a nice, very long vacation because, you know, he deserves it. A guy that's been through so many seasons, have coached so many fantastic players, has been a part of such an amazing city, a city that I was born in, have been around as well. Pittsburgh's an awesome place. Their fan base is amazing as well, too. I know that firsthand from seeing my dad, hearing the stories of my dad playing there, but also when he coached, when we would go over there for some of the games during the regular season, and even into the postseason as well. Like, that is a fan base in a city that is truly, truly, truly amazing. And for him to departure from that, it was like, man, it's a nice way to go, but it's sad at the same time. But I'm happy for him. He's done an amazing job, and I know that fan base, you know, respects him for it. So, yeah, it was really cool. And I just saw my dad interview on that as well. So I'll talk to him about that a little bit later.
Your dad was on NFL Network, obviously, given his 2 cents. He said he was a bit surprised as well, but Mike can do whatever the heck he wants. Like you said, he deserves a bit of a vacation. Yeah. Can I follow up on that fan base real quick? Because, listen, Mike took him to the playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. We also know that the last 7 years when they go to the playoffs, they lose, and they lose badly. Yeah. This stat blew me away watching the game Monday night. In those 7 consecutive playoff losses, they were down by 21 points at one point in all 7 of those losses.
Wow.
How much do you think, I don't want to say they're unreasonable expectations, but the fan base expects so much more. He says that he blocks out the outside noise.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of impossible, just my opinion. Do you think that wore him down?
I don't think it necessarily wore him down. I just think, you know, when you have a city in a place like Pittsburgh that has had success, whether it was in the early 2010s, or even, you know, when my dad was playing too, like, you talk about the Steel Curtain, you talk about the times, and, you know, I think, what was it, the 70s, you know, when they were just rolling, right? This fan base has been through a lot, and they've seen what could be, right? They've seen championship banners, Lombardi trophies being held up high, and that's why there's so many Steeler fans across the nation. Like, even when they come to SoFi or any other stadium, you see a bunch of terrible towels. So I don't think it necessarily weighed on Mike Tomlin, but I just think there is a lot of responsibility that you have to give to an organization like that when they have had success in the past. And it's not to say that they, you know, going to the playoffs is great. Like, but at some point in time, it's like, okay, can we get to a divisional? Can we get to a AFC championship? And obviously, can we get to a Super Bowl? And I think fans and supporters alike were like, okay, after 7 years, we got to do something, right? Like, we can't just keep being one and done. And not only one and done, but these losses are brutal. And that's not to say that's the reason why Mike Tomlin stepped down. Obviously, he obviously probably had a bunch of reasons as to why he made that decision. But at the same time, is you want to give a fan base a little bit more hope than just, hey, we're making it to the playoffs, we got a winning record, but we can't, you know, progress from there. And hopefully this step, you know, whoever they find or whatever they do in the future will allow them to get back to the glory days.
Talking to Quentin Lake here, the Rams, they're fresh off their win over the Panthers, now getting ready for Chicago and getting ready for a much different challenge than Bryce Young, who played a very good game.
Yeah, he did.
And since that game, the Panthers have picked up his fifth-year option. Saw you two speaking on the field after the game, NFL Films' Mike Scott. That interaction, pretty cool stuff. Now you get ready for Caleb Williams.
Yep.
What kind of challenge, Quentin Lake, is Caleb Williams?
He's probably one of the – I think he has a no-fear mindset. He goes out there and he is a gunslinger. And I think the most dangerous thing is when you get him out of the pocket. You know, his ability, it was that fourth down play against the Packers in that first wild card playoff game when he was rolling to his left. And there was like a still frame of him 2 feet in the air throwing across his body. Like, that's just stuff that's you don't usually see that. And when you have a talent like that, that's what makes it dangerous, especially for my position, is you might be covering for, you know, there's a rule of thumb for the NFL is you usually cover for maybe 3 or 4 seconds, right? But with a guy like him that has the mobility, has the arm talent, you could be covering for 6, 7, maybe 8 seconds as well. So that's what puts a lot of pressure, especially on the back end too. But, you know, they have a good team. Ben Johnson has those guys riled up, has given Chicago a lot of hope, and you know they're a good team. They're a damn good team, and it's been cool to see, cool to study them, and it's definitely going to be a challenge for us this Sunday.
All right, let's go back to that throw, because that throw was one of, I mean, I said it on the show on Monday, it was one of the best, what, considering the circumstances, it was the great, one of the greatest throws I've ever seen.
Yeah,
it was a throw that made me jump up off my couch and by myself, I'm watching that fourth quarter by myself at home, just scream holy you know what. Like, have you ever, ever seen a play like that?
Yeah, I see it all the time in practice. Luckily, we have the MVP, so I see.
Matthew Stafford is not levitating in midair and making that throw, is he?
I mean, probably not at 37.
Okay.
You know, maybe back in the day, but, you know, that Caleb's throw was amazing. It was incredible in terms of what he did with his body, but in terms of just seeing in crazy throws on a consistent basis on a day-to-day, I mean, I see it all the time with Stafford. So I luckily haven't played against him, so I haven't been on the tail end of that, only in practice where it's, you know, not, the stakes aren't as high. But I would say in comparison to Caleb's throw, the one throw that I would say was like, whoa, would have to be Puka's catch against the Bills last year. I think we had America's Game of the Week when he toe-tapped it. That throw was incredible.
Yeah, that was sick. Yeah. And you never faced Caleb, obviously, when you're at UCLA. You guys miss each other by a year when he was at SC. Yeah. This week, though, of course, Stetson Bennett is Caleb Williams. How is that going?
It's good. So we'll see this week. And Stetson's, he's done an awesome job replicating any quarterback that we needed in terms of scout team looks. But it's going to be a challenge for him. It is definitely going to be a challenge for us because of, you know, just his arm talent, mobility, escapability, all that stuff.
You mentioned Ben Johnson earlier, schematically.
Yeah.
Sean McVay was talking on Monday about how much he respects Ben and what he is doing. And I assume that you guys this week are not just going to look at Bears tape. You're going to look at Lions tape as well, with Ben Johnson calling plays for your old friend Jared Goff and what he did there schematically.
Yeah.
So much of this stuff, especially for you as a DB, any play caller, it's his job to put you in conflict, but maybe Ben does it better than Sean, obviously, is part of this conversation as well, but as well as anyone out there. Like, look at the stuff with Loveland in the red zone last week, how they scheme him free. Schematically, as I finally get to the question, Quentin, what are you facing this week?
Yeah, Ben has done an amazing job. Even when we played him, really for the last 2 years, the three times we played him, he's done a fantastic job of, you know, putting his skilled position players and his quarterback in positions to make plays, you know, explosive plays at that too. And I think the biggest thing I saw was he never really tries to abandon the run game. And it's always, how can I, you know, get this run game going so that I can open, you know, boots and play action passes and explosive plays down the field, and get the ball to my playmakers when it matters the most. He's done a fantastic job. And I know it was the 2024 wild card, two years ago, 2023 wild card, which was technically in 24.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, and then the time when we played him last year at the beginning of the season, like, he does a great job. You know, they have really, really good skill position. They have Luther Burden. They have DJ Moore. They have Roman Dunze. They have Colson Loveland, who's come onto the scene. So, and then the, you know, two-headed monster at running back, you got DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manungai. You know, these are guys that have really bought in, really bought into what Ben Johnson wants to do, and they've been executing at a high level. So much respect to them. And I know it's going to be a challenge for us because, you know, we, at this point in the season, this is what I like to kind of tell people is you have almost 18 games of tape of your opponent. So you can really, it comes down to who can execute at a fundamental level better. Technique, eyes, keys, all that stuff. The scheme is going to happen. They're going to try and scheme us up. But at the end of the day, if you play good with technique and fundamentals, I think, and whoever plays and executes harder, that's really who's going to win the game. So,
all right, Quinn, I hate to make weather a story, but I'm going to do it. I was there a couple of weeks ago, Bears.
Was it cold then?
Yeah, it was negative 15, not during the game, but wind chill was negative 15 when I went to get coffee that morning. They say the wind chill for you guys Sunday night could be below zero. At one point, it could be snowing, likely single digits. Let me check my phone here as we record this. It is,
I think it's single digits.
It's 76 degrees where we sit right now in Southern California. Realistically, how on earth do you get ready for that?
You can't. I mean, they tell you you can cold tub. You just go in the cold tub 10 minutes a day and, you know, get that, like.
Seriously?
There's nothing that is going to replicate it. And I'm like, look, I've been in California my whole life. So cold weather games are not something I'm very familiar with. But at the same time is, you know, they have to play in it too. And it's not like they're practicing in minus whatever or single digit degrees. So they have an indoor.
They have an indoor, but they also have an outdoor right next to their indoor. And if they want to get a practice in on Wednesday outdoors, they can.
They do. But, I don't think the weather conditions are going to be a problem for us. I really don't. And if people were to say it is, that's just an excuse. At the end of the day, you have to go out there and execute, and you can't let any external factors let that hurt you. You have to prepare for it. What can you do to make sure that you're comfortable and you're ready to play? Maybe warm up a little bit more and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you got to go out there and ball out. You know, there's no excuses when you get this to this point in the season. You know, you're playing for a Lombardi, and whatever you can do to get ready, whatever you can do mentally and physically to prepare, that's what you need to do to go out there and play your best.
So I'm looking down here as you're talking. It was like 45 this morning. But like,
I know,
even
that
if
was
you guys
nice.
Woke
I
up,
saw that. I was like, oh, man, that would have been.
Yeah, like if you got up and practiced at 5 in the morning, it would still only be 45.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just absurd. And I know you've also thought of this as well, even though it's focused on the game and the game only. So if the Seahawks are to get stunned at home by the 49ers on Saturday night, or let me turn that around. If the 49ers were to shock the Seahawks, play them again for the second time in 3 weeks on Saturday night, you guys will know when you take the field on Sunday that you are playing for a chance to come home and host the NFC Championship game. How do you feel about that? Against the 49ers of all teams?
Yeah, it would be amazing. It's kind of, you know, history repeats itself a little bit. You look at the 2021 season when the Rams and 49ers were in it, you know, kind of reminds me a little bit about that too, where we were able to host the NFC Championship against the 49ers. Now, it doesn't really seem like much of a host, so hopefully we can, you know, figure that out, make it a sea
Save
of blue.
Save that for next week.
Yeah, but, you know, that's awesome. You know, we had a shot last year too, which was, you know, with everything
that... Eagles.
Yeah, you know, with the Commanders beating the Lions and us, if we were able to, you know, finish off the Eagles, we're going to have the same shot. But, you know, luckily enough, we're in another situation where we have that possibility. And, you know, hopefully everything shakes out our way. At the end of the day, we have to win our game on Sunday, no matter what. But to know that there is a possibility where we can go home and host the NFC Championship, and then for the next two games, we won't have to leave California. That would be awesome.
There's some symmetry. You guys on the road, cold environment. It was snowing last year in Philly, obviously. Yeah. Could be snowing Sunday night there, waiting. Yeah. Don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I was thinking of that as well. I mean, the crazy thing is, if, what was the other result you needed? You needed, if the Packers were to win, had won, if they had held on and beaten the Bears last week, you'd be at home this week. But exactly. I mean, that's neither here nor there. You guys got the win, and now you guys move on to Chicago. Quentin Lake, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. Stay warm, pack warmly, and good luck in Chicago on Sunday night.
Andrew, thank you so much again. And yeah, we're going to go out there and do our best, play our best. And even though it will be cold, it'll be fun.
All right. See you at SoFi next week.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. Great stuff there with Quentin Lake, and truly happy for that guy that he got his contract, fought through the injury, and is back on the field. Time now, Jory Epstein, for one more thing before we go. The floor is yours.
Yeah, my one more thing is about Mike Tomlin fitting after his 19 years as Pittsburgh head coach come to an end. And Albert Breer from Sports Illustrated had a great story about how Mike Tomlin, when he would go to these pro days, would not just want to find out, okay, what's this guy like on the field, or even what the players are like off the field. He would want to talk to the student social media managers who were in charge of trying to get all of the recruiting elements in and trying to target the teenagers and say, what's resonating with the teenagers these days? What do you try and do on social media to most attract attention for your program? And I just tend to think that the EQ element, the emotional intelligence element of a head coaching role, is underrated. And Mike Tomlin, I've heard multiple stories through the years of the ways that he had really found creative ways to try and better understand people. And I think that person element, as Albert talked about in his story, was one of his superpowers. So I think that when we look at all the coaches around the league this year, yes, there's an element of scheme. Yes, there's what connections do they have. But let's try and see how intentionally and creatively do they work to understand the people in their building so they can get the most out of them.
Yeah, so much of modern scouting today and modern coaching is, how do I connect with this group of young people? Is this person someone who we think would learn in our system well? Are they a visual learner? Are they a tactile learner? You know what I'm saying? And the more you can find out about the players, whether it's a specific player you're drafting or just younger people in general, the better you are as a coach, the better you are as an organization. Because drafting is really HR. I mean, you could turn the tape on to know who can play football. So much of it is, does this person fit with who we are and what we want to do? Mike Tomlin, you've seen him, Jory, at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he would get on the field and coach. He wasn't a coach. All the coaches stand around the sideline in Mobile. He would get out there and just take over drills. So he had a lot of clubs in his bag as to how to figure out how to connect with younger players. Yeah, he's one of a kind. He'll coach again. I don't know where. Likely not this year, but he'll coach again. My one more thing is just the sheer number of openings. We talked before at the top of the show, 9 openings. So the last time we had this many was 2022, when there were 10. Now, to be clear, there were really 9, but then Bruce Arians, and you and I were there in Palm Beach at the league meeting, Bruce Arians like mysteriously left the meetings. We saw him at the bar on Monday, and then all of a sudden he's back in Tampa, and he's retiring. So that became the 10th, and then Todd Bowles took that job. So if you include Todd Bowles, there were 10 coaching changes in the 2022 into 2023 offseason. 8 of those 10 have already been fired. 8. Todd Bowles and Kevin O'Connell have both taken their teams to the playoffs. Neither went this year. Are the only 2 remaining. 2 of them were 1 and done. Lovie Smith in Houston, Nathaniel Hackett didn't even make it through 1 in Denver. They were both fired. There are more head coaches from the 2017 cycle still with jobs than from the 2022 cycle. So I guess my point is, as you shake your head, understandably, I did the same. We just did a matchmaking thing. Like, there's a chance of those 9, half of them burn out in 3 years, if not more.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think that that's why, going back to the conversation of whether Pittsburgh's an attractive job, I initially thought it wasn't because of what I view as an aging roster and some serious talent questions, including at quarterback. And then when I ask coaches around the league, they're like, yeah, but look at the ownership. You just don't find ownership like that in sports. And I think one of the coaches I talked to put it really well, which is you'll have a long runway and you'll need it because they do have some retooling to do. But if the Steelers continue to operate as they have in recent years, that's one of the things, is that they're not that team that's turning over every 3 to 4 years.
Well, so that's the question. Do the coaches you talk to think they would operate the same way?
They do.
Okay.
They could be wrong, but that's what they thought.
Yeah.
It made it an attractive job to them, more attractive than I thought they were going to say.
It's interesting. Art Rooney, the second today, said that he was going to run it back. He was not going to make a move with Mike Tomlin, which is not surprising at all for any observer. Like, it might be disappointing for the fans who wanted him fired. Look, he took it out of your hands. He left. But the idea that Art Rooney was going to move on, regardless of how the season ended, it wasn't going to happen. That's not what they do. Period. Full stop. I'm curious, like, what it would have taken for them to want to move on. Don't know the answer. He wouldn't go there. I do know this answer. We had fun today. Jory, are you back on tomorrow's show? You are. Yes, right? Yeah, Thursday. Always, right?
I'm not. You've already got me down for two. You're stuck with Charles tomorrow. And Ben.
I'm stuck with Charles. Kyle Van Noy will also join the show. We'll ask him his thoughts on John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson, and Steve Bisciotti's open mic yesterday as well. This has been fun. For Jory Epstein, I'm Andrew Siciliano. Thank you for being with us today on Inside Coverage.